It is February 21st, and I'm Scott.
And I'm Mark.
And apparently I'm a man out of time today. I don't know what's going on.
It's like you looked mostly like you were unsure of the February part.
Like, when is this? What reality is this? This is Church is Lame, and we have some crazy headlines this week that I think do a pretty good job of illustrating why people don't take church folks seriously. You want to kick us off, Mark?
Sure. Because the SBC is the gift that keeps on giving, they recently decided to oust four churches from the denomination.
It's like instead of four more churches.
You know? Or in the case of the SBC, maybe it's four less queers.
Oh my gosh, you are brilliant. Nicely played. That was really good. Well.
Oh God, yes. I deserve to be probably yelled at for that one. But
I'll slap your wrist the next time I'm in town.
Yeah. So these four churches, so two of which they were kind of discharged for nothing terribly, you know, major, just having a woman as a pastor and not paying into the general fund. And I don't know what, you know, the SBC's policies are on, like, you know, churches tithing and how they handled that and whether this was a thing. That wasn't the part that really got my interest. It was the two churches that were discharged for mishandling issues regarding sex abuse.
Yeah, because the SBC as a whole has been really awesome at that.
Right. And that was exactly my immediate response. That was like, well, ain't that the pot calling the kettle black?
Hello.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if there's any organization that needs to maybe extend a little bit of grace, it's like when your entire denomination has systematic and systemic problems, then, you know, you need to fix that. And like coming down on two churches for being not perfect when, you know, what was that? Like that report, like 700 or 800 cases.
700. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's sad and comical all at once.
Yeah. It makes you wonder what the real reason is they wanted to get rid of these two churches. Right. Cause clearly like, oh, you just mishandled sexual abuse allegations poorly is just a convenient excuse. Right. Because that's every church in the SBC that's done that. So, I would really like to know, like, what the real reason is behind, like, that kind of thing. And they couldn't go with the other tropes, right? Like, obviously, if you're not going to give to the common fund, then what's the point of you being in the denomination? And obviously, if you're going to skirt our ideals about women in leadership, that would be another easy one to go to, and they couldn't go to that. So they went to, instead, this very bizarre... not a bizarre reason, but a bizarre reason in light of the overall denomination's failures in this respect.
Yeah. And it's just interesting too, to me, for me to think like how badly the SBC is hemorrhaging churches as well as just general membership.
Yeah.
So it's like, I kind of would have expected them to maybe ease up a little bit on like the discharging of churches.
Yeah.
And just try to figure it out. But I mean, without doing like a serious deep dive on any of this, I mean, I can't say really anything more than just, you know, my little, you know, opinions here.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely, you would think that the SBC at this point, or at some point in the last 2 years, you would think somebody over at the home office would be like, can we just have a month where we don't make headlines? Can we conduct ourselves in a way that we are not the butt of every joke in Christian America? You know, but they seem to just like, I don't know. I guess as long as you're going to be in a season of bad news, you might as well get it all out while you're there, you know?
Yeah. So I would love to see the SBC be out of the news cycle for at least for anything negative.
Yep, absolutely. Speaking of other people we love, and for just a little bit, there's nothing more that we love than to to rake megachurch pastors and prosperity gospel pastors over the coals more than a little bit. Okay. And so this one, this story was good for a laugh today. Our favorite pastor, former senior pastor, founder of Hillsong Church, Brian Houston, bizarrely tweeted late at night, quote, "ladies and girls kissing," unquote, on Twitter slash X. And then, you know, a matter of minutes later, like 15 minutes later, the tweet was gone and it was replaced with, "I think I was hacked," which, of course, the interwebs had no problem jumping on immediately with all sorts of replies. The best of them being things like, "you shouldn't confuse Twitter and Google."
That's fantastic. That is totally fantastic.
That was great. And the other great one being the many people who replied, "well, if you were hacked, how did you get your account back so fast?"
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, all that to say, young people, stay away from the drugs and alcohol. You know, I don't know how else to explain it. You know, stay away from the feel good stuff until you're older.
You know, and there's a part of me that, you know, like at first seeing this, my brain was kind of like, "oh, you meant Jerry Falwell Jr."
Yes.
Just because it's like, wait, what? Oh, but you know, don't worry, Brian Houston. I mean, like he's just tired and confused, and you know, he's working on all this new ministry work that he's doing.
Yeah, like he says he's creating some new online first type of ministry. And you would think that when you're in the middle of an important launch, that you would want to try to avoid PR gaffes such as this one.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, at least he didn't tweet like lesbian orgy or, you know, something like that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I guess it could have been worse, I guess. Or like, on the other hand, like there's no such thing as bad PR, right? Mm-hmm. So like that there is a swath of Americans out there somewhere kind of going, "well, look, it just shows that he's as human as the rest of us." Like, totally missing the point, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, because, like, I tweet this. Greg, hey, that's, like, a joke because I think, you know, Twitter is just immoral and wrong.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Don't, you know, do something different than Facebook, all right? This is all I'm asking.
Yeah.
But it's just like, yeah, it's like, I don't tweet or post on Facebook, like, random things like that. Like that is just so out there and strange to me.
Right. Like there were a couple, I don't remember how many years ago it was, like 2 or 3 years ago, there was a natural disaster and Twitter was the platform where people could report in real time.
Yeah.
Like this is what's going on and I'm safe and here's the other people who are safe. Right. And the value of Twitter became like really apparent. And it's so disappointing to see that it's just kind of turned into a dumping ground for I don't know. It's like one. It's everybody's marketing tool that they don't know how to use well for every company, and then for every individual, it's just kind of like your place to feel like you've got a posse or your you know, a crew for your awful opinion or for your ideas that are wrong, you know, like, oh, I can come on here with Twitter with millions of other people and be wrong about the same thing together, and because we're all wrong together we must be right.
Yeah, I mean, at least he's not doing like weird dances on TikTok.
Yeah, right.
I mean, like I have yet to understand the appeal of TikTok. I maybe I am like part cave dweller, but
yeah. I think it's valuable in that because it's all real time, you get to see in real time what is in the public zeitgeist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like so like at any moment, like you might see something like New York Yankees trending, right? It's like, oh, yeah. something interesting is happening with the New York Yankees, right? And that might be interesting, right? But then like the weirdest things in the world start to get trending, or like the most stupid things in the world start trending. Like every time Donald Trump says something, it starts trending. And you're like, all of a sudden you're down a big hole of, I hate my life because I can't believe like how stupid this thing was and how many people, how many people stupidly believe the stupid thing that was said, and that keeps perpetuating the stupidity, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, I just with all that, I mean, just thinking about like the way like things propagate through the, that media space, right? Like there was this little story that, that popped out, and it was just about like, it was a Tennessee pastor who had defrauded, one of his parishioners who was a disabled man of over $27,000. And it's like, that's the kind of thing I wish would explode on like the Christian social media front, right? It's like, cause those are the things we need to care about, really. I mean, you know, Brian Houston, I mean, I'm not going to say he was drunk. I'm not going to say he wasn't. But like, you know, in some state of mind, tweeting ladies and girls kissing. I mean, it's just, it's a blip on the radar. And like, you know, I mean, maybe we're both too cynical, but like, yeah, we know nothing's going to happen to him over it.
Right. Hey, why, we might as well go ahead and talk about that story about the pastor who defrauded the disabled man over $27,000. Heartbreaking, because it goes to show that there is no, like, there's no grift too shameful that certain people just won't exploit each other for, you know? Like, this is supposed to be like pastors above reproach. Churches, when you pick your pastors, they are not supposed to be people of questionable character. They're supposed to be above reproach. So if you're even asking yourself, like, is there even the slightest chance this may be a person of dubious character? You do not make them your pastor, you know?
Yeah. There's that, like, you know, like 80s Cold War movie theme. It's like, trust but verify.
Yeah.
And because there's a line in here, the church put out on their Facebook page. And this is one of those things that it just, we've seen it before. It says, you will hear that Pastor David has been arrested. These are totally unfounded accusations. And like, I get the reflex to jump in on the side of your pastor. But like, jumping to their defense immediately is kind of like, hey, you'll hear the pastor has been arrested, but like, we need to wait for the facts to come out before we can make judgment. Like, there, that's more what I want to be seeing a church like that say.
Yeah. And it gets worse. Later in the story, the pastor used this role to defraud and misappropriate the adult out of more than $27,000 and take control of more than $360,000 of the man's pension and Social Security benefits. Took control of his checkbook and accounts and did not let the man review his own accounts.
Yeah, like we call that pulling a Britney Spears.
Yeah.
I mean, like you cannot, as a pastor, be doing this. I mean, I think pastors should never be in a position to be able to do this, but I don't know how, like, you would reasonably prevent this either, like, structurally speaking.
Yeah.
No, just like, I'm being on the leadership team of my church, it's kind of like, well, like, what, like, how would I, like, try to prevent my pastor from being able to do that to somebody? And of course, I mean, I do think having community and having a culture of openness would probably, you know, go a long way to stopping that from occurring. But
yeah, because as you say that, he took part of this money he took and he basically laundered it through the church.
Yeah.
Right. And so there should be some sort of mechanism in the church to figure out whether this is a legitimate donation or whether something sketchy is going on. Yeah, just this one is crazy, because it doesn't just call into question the pastor. It calls into question the congregation. Mm-hmm. Like, if this is the man they look up to, like, where are they at as a church? You know, like, if this, part of modern Christianity in America is we want to be angry at how the world is changing around us and we're not equipped to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like this church has taken it to the extent of, well, we're not just angry, but we're okay if people get their money stolen from them in the name of us getting what we want. You know, because how else do you explain the people at the church watching this money flow through their system and doing nothing?
Yeah, I mean, like, your accounting rules should have prevented it from being laundered or in any way passed through the church, or at least something should have set up a red flag. And I mean, just to look at the church, it doesn't look like the church is particularly large.
Right.
And, you know, so, like, looking at that, it's like it might just be that, like, it's such a small community that people just wanted to, like, to give that extra trust where, like, the pastor really is that top level, you know, ruler of everything.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, you know, my church, which is a lot more, you know, democratic. You know, we have many different boards. So, you know, it could be something like more like that. But, you know, what does scripture say? Be as, you know, wise as serpents and innocent as doves.
Yep. And don't steal other people's money. All right, yeah, let's move on.
That'd be the dove part of that, I think.
Right, that would be the dove part of that, right. All right, finally, we have an article for, actually, it's been all over the news. It's been all over the place. I found it in relevantmagazine.com. No, christianheadlines.com.
Yeah.
So let me get this headline right here. Christian parents who lost custody of child over gender disagreement appeal to the Supreme Court. All right, so these parents had a kid who, biological boy, started identifying as a female. The parents took the hard line. We are a Christian family. Here's what the Bible says. You are not a girl, you're a boy. The state of Indiana started an investigation, took her out of the house. Let's see here. Let me get the exact wording. I don't want to get this wrong. So let's see here. So there was an agreement, first of all, that there would be a compromise, that during a time, they would call her by her preferred name. Oh no, they would use a nickname. And that they would use the preferred pronouns. But then they kind of continued to push their values and their disagreement by forcing him into her. Sorry, this is hard for me. I'm an old man. Okay. forcing her into therapy for what they believe were mental health issues. And therefore, it's not the right word. And thereby causing also some eating disorders. Eventually he's removed. She was removed from the home. And the parents then had the state investigated, and, then the state said, capitulated and said, okay, maybe abuse is too strong a word for what was going on, but just the antagonistic nature of not being affirming to her pronouns and stuff was enough of a reason to get her out, which the appellate court upheld. And so now they're asking the Supreme Court to step in, is basically where we're at. And I really wanted to talk about this because it really drives me crazy at a really visceral level. Most of the time on this show, we talk about churches and how, like, there is no point in being inviting to the LGBTQ if all you want to do is reform them, right? If all you want to do is change their mind, right? Because I don't know if this is a news flash or if I'm telling anybody this for the first time. But the LGBTQ don't go to church because they want to be convinced otherwise. They go to the church for the same reason the rest of us go to the church, because they want community. They want relationship. They want to be accepted and loved, and they want to learn more about Jesus and learn more about what it means to live a spiritual life, you know? And so it's heartbreaking when it happens at the church.
Yeah.
It is even more heartbreaking when it happens in the home,
mm-hmm.
where because you don't understand your child, you turn them into an outcast in their own home, that they become somebody to be reformed instead of somebody to enjoy life with, to do life with and enjoy it, and, yeah. and to make the most out of it. And I just don't understand where in Scripture we've gotten that the goal of Scripture is to take what's supposed to be a loving unit and turn them against each other for no other reason than because if I don't make an enemy of you, I think the God of the universe that loves everybody is all of a sudden going to have less love for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what kind of bizarre theology had to go on to make that a rational decision-making mechanism?
Yeah, I mean, this is a complicated situation, and I like don't want to pretend that I have any easy answers for it. But, you know, when how many times are our kids, you know, LGBTQ, anybody in that spectrum, kicked out of their homes at, you know, relatively young ages by parents who hate them, or who can't stand them to be around, just because of that kind of, you know, I'm not sure if I want to call it fundamentalist, but just like, you know, like just terrible and aggressive attitudes towards these people that are their children. You know, it's like, and seeing the state to remove somebody from the home, it's like, gosh, like, I can't sit there and say, well, the state was wrong to do or the state was right to do it without knowing a whole lot of details that I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, what I do know is that, you know, Christian families tend to be the worst places for trans individuals. And trans individuals, oftentimes because of familial relationships as well as other social relationships, need therapy badly, not to like have you, you know, not to have them be convinced that they're a different gender, but to have them survive being treated like jerks by just yeah. the people that mean the most to them.
Right. There is a part of the Bible that tells us that that our commitment to Jesus will pit brother against brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's not what's going on here. I want to make sure that, because that's a common defense, that right. when we stand up for our fence, for our faith, we are gonna create separation, even in family ties. But that's not what is happening here. They are not the parents are not standing up for their faith and the child going, I reject you because of your faith. It is the parents who are rejecting the child for exploring his gender identity, right? So the parents are not being rejected for their faith. It is the child that's being rejected for exploring, you know, this new frontier of mm-hmm. gender identity that we're all still coming to grips with. And instead of coming, like, instead of admitting, like, this is something I need to come to grips with, the parents just said, no, we're not having this. And then they don't even do that child the courtesy of saying, this is our house, our rules, and if you can't live by them, get out. Then they still try to pretend like, well, they do the worst thing. They go, well, we love you, but we're not going to treat you like we love you. Like, we love you, but the way we're going to make you feel is awful about who you are. And that mm-hmm. is not love. And I've had this conversation several times now. The common retort from the Christian will be, I can love them without accepting them. like, look.
Yeah, that love, the love the sinner, hate the sinner.
Yeah, right. Like, if I don't, if I as someone who needs love don't feel love, then you are not giving love, right? Love is like communications. Love, that there's a sender and a receiver. Mm-hmm. And you can send love, send communication all you want, but if I don't receive it, there was no successful communication. Love is the same thing. You can send love all you want, but if I don't feel it, then it was a worthless gesture. It was absolutely worthless. And you can look in the mirror and go, I tried, but that's a bunch of BS, to be quite frank, right? It's like the mm-hmm. church that goes, well, we want to make, you know, we want to be a great force in our community. Well, how many hungry people did you feed? How many homeless people did you house? How many naked people did you clothe? Well, none. But man, we have a great fish fry on Friday nights. You know, it's like, well, like, don't tell me, or I can tell for myself how loving you are, that like, what you think comes out as love doesn't come out as love just because you say it comes out of love, right? And so we as people and we as the church need to reorient ourselves from a love that isn't a definitional love, but a love that is an expressive love, expressive to the point where the people we're aiming that love at feel loved, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I feel like it shouldn't have to be said, but like when it comes to just like a pastoral concern, mm-hmm. you know, I think like, you know, everything you're saying is just, I mean, it should be painfully obvious. And like that whole thing, like when Jesus says, like, they will hate you because of me, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. Things that anybody who's been in around a church is familiar with. I just want to direct you toward Proverbs 25 verses 21 and 22. If your enemy is hungry, give him food to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. The principle here is pretty straightforward. You doing good is the reason they will hate you.
Right.
If you can't love somebody fully, and you know, because of who they are, then you're doing things wrong.
Yeah.
Like our job is to love our enemy as if, you know, I mean, they're our enemy. We can admit that, but if somebody is your enemy, you are still commanded to love them. And exactly. It's hard, and I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying I do it because I'm, you know, an awful broken human being like, you know, like everybody else. But like, you know, I think like that is just like that proverb is what sticks in my head, I think, the most when I think about these types of issues.
Right. And the fact that it's hard is what makes it worthwhile. It's what makes it, it's what gives it value. It's what sets the Christ follower apart, quite frankly, right? Yeah. Is the love response, right? Mm-hmm. There are other religions in the world that have a hate response that where even the religion goes as far as to preach violence, right? Yeah. There are other religions that are more introspective, that the response is really to go inwards and find out the reasons why, right? Mm-hmm. So there are a myriad of responses. And so what sets apart the Christian approach to life and to good living is not just, hey, we believe in Jesus, one day we're going to die, and then we're all going to live in golden penthouses in the sky somewhere. Like, that is not the big lesson. The big lesson is that Jesus taught us how to bring the kingdom to earth, right? So, right. So all of those qualities of a kingdom mindset, of a godly mindset, of a spiritual worldview, all of those qualities can be brought to bear in the quote-unquote real world that we set foot upon here and now, right? And so if we believe that God is just and that Jesus is love, then it is upon it is put on our shoulders to be just and to be love to those around us, and not just to be the wagging finger of disappointment to every person in your world for being less than you are.
Yeah, and while, you know, I can't sit here and like say, like, you know, the state is the agent that should determine whether or not, you know, you're being a, you know, an appropriate parent or not. Yeah. In every case, I mean, that is part of a role that we assign to the state, and they're not going to be perfect. So if in this case, maybe it was the right thing to do, maybe it was the wrong thing to do. But then to seek to like have this never, ever happen. Mm-hmm. I am concerned that like, it does set an awfully bad precedent, from a legal standpoint. And then of course I'm not a lawyer, so, you know, now hashtag not legal advice. But like, what about other issues of neglect or abuse? Like, could that, you know, I mean, cause there are people out there that just, you know, they would sooner blow themselves up than let the government take their children. Right. And they are horrible people, you know? So yeah. It's like, I don't know. It's like, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth, and I'm just going to have to kind of see how it plays out, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other part I want to talk about really quick. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make this last thing. How does John and Jane Schmo come up with the money for a legal team that can take this to the Supreme Court? And the answer is they don't, right? So the same group of rich folks that want to put NFL Super Bowl ads, he gets us, who have that kind of money, they want to make a point in the court system. So they say, hey, we think we identify with the thing that you're going through. And instead of putting our money towards love, let's go to the Supreme Court and wave our flags and rattle our cans and stand up for the quote unquote moral high ground, you know, which of course the Supreme Court then is going to have to, you know, say, look, like, all humans have rights and just because this kid is a kid doesn't mean that you get to mentally abuse him. And they're mm-hmm. Either Supreme Court's going to pass or else they're going to force the Supreme Court to say, yeah, you can't do this stuff and expect to get away with it. You know, you can't mentally abuse people, period. End of story.
Yeah. Like, we shouldn't have to say that, like, you know, as, you know, people that believe in Jesus, but, you know, yeah. Unfortunately, I think, you know, and, you know, every headline we've talked about today is, you know, abusive in some way, shape or form. So
in some way. So please stop. To all the churches out there and Christians who are doing literally ungodly things, please stop. And I think that's where it's going to be. Once again, I'm Scott and that's Mark, and we are Churches Lame. Every week we find the stories of the most horrendous acts of Christian love. And we submit them here for your consideration for why churches aren't being taken seriously anymore. So if you'd like to join the conversation, by all means, you know, shoot us a comment on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all the social stuff. And if you'd like to be particularly wordy, go ahead and shoot us an email at churcheslamepodcast@gmail.com.
And with that, go in peace. Serve the Lord. Amen.